leader!
Order, order.
The most significant event of the parliamentary year occurred right at the very start and was reported to members by their speaker, David Carter, straight after he had read the daily prayer on their first day back in the debating chamber on Tuesday, February the 10th.
Honourable members, I wish to advise the House that I've received a letter from Mike Sabin resigning his seat with effect from Friday, 30 January 2014.
National's Northland MP was barely 3 months into his second term, and the reasons for his sudden resignation remain unclear. But it created a ripple of consequential actions that ran from the first day to the very last of this parliamentary year. The immediate impact was to create a vacancy in the Northland seat, reducing the total number of MPs in the chamber by one to 120, and the number of National MPs from 60 to 59. While leaving the number required for a bare majority at 61 or more, it created the potential for dead heats of 60 aside. National now reduced to 59, plus the ACT member for Epsom, versus the 57 of the three largest opposition parties, Labour, the Greens and New Zealand First, plus three in the middle from the Maori Party and the United Future member for Oahu. Formal agreements with the three smallest parties after the September election had secured John Key's National-led minority government a comfortable margin of 4 votes over the combined total of all other parties. But while that gave the government a majority on the critical votes of confidence and money supply, enabling it to pass its budget, for instance, National's whips had to negotiate with their colleagues in other parties to ensure that they had the numbers to keep each and every government bill moving through the chamber. Mike Sabin's resignation made the government reliant on either the Maori Party's 2 votes or both ACT's David Seymour and United Future's Peter Dunn. While Mr Seymour almost invariably votes with National, and the Maori Party's Tuurua Flavel and Marama Fox are frequently found voting with the opposition, Peter Dunn moves back and forth across the chamber. With government legislation, Mr Dunn's opposition can be a game stopper, as happened with the National Party's resource management reform, held up outside the chamber for nearly a year. With members' bills, Mr Dunn's vote can decide whether a bill lives or dies, as Rhys Lyon reports.
Among the members' bills, which relied on the support of the United Future member for Oahu in March, while the House was waiting for Northland to elect a replacement for Mike Sabin, was one from Labour's Sue Moroney. Drawn from the members' ballot and introduced on Thursday, April the 5th, 2012, her Parental Leave and Employment Protection 6 months Paid Leave Amendment Bill had its first reading on Wednesday, July the 25th of that year, when Ms Moroney explained the aim of the bill.
This bill proposes extending paid parental leave by 12 weeks to reach 6 months over the course of the next 3 years.
The close vote on that first reading, a sign of things to come.
New Zealand National.
59 votes opposed.
New Zealand Labour.
34 votes in favour.
Green Party.
14 votes in favour.
New Zealand First.
8 votes in favour.
Māori Party.
3 votes in favour.
Mana.
1 vote in favour.
ACT New Zealand.
1 vote opposed.
United Future.
1 vote in favour.
Honourable members, the ayes are 61, the noes are 60, the motion is agreed to.
The bill was sent to the Government Administration Committee, and Sue Moroney saw it back before the House for its second reading on Wednesday, May the 28th, 2014, nearly 2 years later.
The reason why it has taken so long to get to the second reading of a bill that supports families, that extends paid parental leave to 26 weeks, is because that government, that National Party, has done every single thing in its power to stop this measure from taking place.
And the final vote on that second reading was not without controversy.
New Zealand National.
59 opposed.
New Zealand Labour.
34 votes in favour.
Green Party.
14 votes in favour.
New Zealand First.
7 votes in favour.
Māori Party.
3 votes opposed.
Next day, however, the Māori Party's Tuurua Flavel sought to amend his party's vote on the bill.
Mr Speaker, I seek leave for the votes of the Māori Party to be changed to 3 votes for the ayes.
Is there any objection to that course of action? There is none. The result... Order. The result of the vote will be changed accordingly. The ayes are 61, the noes are 60.
And with that, the Parental Leave and Employment Protection 6 months Paid Leave Amendment Bill had its final reading on Wednesday, February the 28th this year. And with the Northland seat still vacant, this was the result.
New Zealand National.
59 votes opposed.
New Zealand Labour.
32 votes in favour.
Green Party.
14 proudly in favour.
New Zealand First.
11 votes in favour.
Māori Party.
2 votes in favour.
Ag New Zealand.
1 opposed.
United Future.
1 in favour.
Members, the ayes are 60, the noes are 60, the motion is lost.
A dead heat is a defeat. One short of the majority required for it to go forward, the bill failed to pass its final reading. 3 weeks later, the same fate befell the Healthy Homes Guarantee Bill from Labour's Phil Twyford, also supported by the Māori Party and Peter Dunn. Its first reading kicked off by Mr Twyford on Wednesday, March the 18th.
What it will do is it directs the Energy Conservation Agency, ECA, to set standards for insulation and heating. It requires landlords, every time they post a new tenancy agreement, to make a declaration that they meet those standards.
The result of that first reading announced by Assistant Speaker Lindsay Tish.
Members, the ayes are 60, the noes are 60, the motion is not agreed to.
Numbers in the debating chamber were not restored to the full 121 until Tuesday, April the 28th, which began with this news from the Speaker.
Honourable Members, I have received from the Electoral Commission a writ dated 14 April 2015 declaring Right Honourable Winston Peters to be elected to represent the electorate of Northland.
Winston Peters was already one of the 11 list MPs that New Zealand First secured with its 9% of the vote in September. While there's nothing to stop a list MP representing an electorate at the same time, it prevents the next person on the party's list from coming in to fill that vacancy, and in this case, taking New Zealand First muster in the House from 11 to an even dozen. So the next task for Mr Carter was this announcement.
Honourable Members, I wish to advise the House that I have received a letter from the Right Honourable Winston Peters resigning his list seat in the House with effect at midnight on 23 April 2015.
And that created a free list seat. So back to the Speaker.
I have further received from the Electoral Commission a return declaring Rhea Iris Daphne Bond to be elected a Member of Parliament to fill the vacancy created by the resignation of Right Honourable Winston Peters from his list seat. I understand that Rhea Bond is present and wishes to take the oath. Would she please come forward to the chair on my right?
Once Rhea Bond had been sworn in and had taken her seat on the New Zealand First benches, total numbers in the chamber returned to 121. The magic number for a majority of 61, now moving across the chamber whenever the three main opposition parties, Labour, the Greens and New Zealand First, could attract support from the Māori Party and Peter Dunn. Back to Rhys Lyon.
The shift in the balance of power in the chamber encouraged Sue Moroney and Phil Twyford to put new entries into the members' ballot. Sue Moroney's redrafted and retitled Parental Leave and Employment Protection 6 months Paid Leave and Work Contact Hours Amendment Bill was drawn from the ballot on July the 23rd and again supported by the Māori Party and Peter Dunn, passed its first reading by 61 to 60 on Wednesday, September the 16th, when it was again sent off to the Government Administration Committee for public submissions. Presenting that bill to the committee on October the 14th, Ms Moroney said it was similar to the previous paid parental leave bill in her name, although the new one introduced provisions around work contact hours.
The idea with work contact hours is that parents who are on paid parental leave can come back and do a small and limited amount of paid work that, in my mind, is likely to be training opportunities that they will be paid to undertake during the course of that 6 months and not lose their entitlement to 6 months paid parental leave.
And that's what made Sue Moroney's bill sufficiently different to get around Standing Order 264, preventing defeated bills from being debated again in the same calendar year. Phil Twyford's bill, now in the name of his leader Andrew Little, and with one other minor modification, was drawn from the ballot on Thursday, October the 15th, and immediately prompted this ruling from the Speaker, David Carter, that same afternoon.
In my opinion, this bill should never have been accepted for the ballot. I have asked the clerk to ensure that bills proposed to go on the ballot are scrutinised more carefully for compliance with Standing Order 264. In future, bills that are the same in substance as ones read or defeated in the same calendar year will not be permitted into the ballot.
Labor's Chief Whip Chris Hipkins said the ruling was without precedent and contrary to the advice they'd received that the bill was in order.
I therefore ask, Mr Speaker, that you withdraw the ruling pending further consideration of the matter by either the Standing Orders Committee or the Business Committee.
But Mr Carter said that he'd already given his ruling considerable thought.
The member's very first point is right. This is the first time that this has ever happened. But I made the point that in my mind this bill should never have been accepted. If advice was given that it was acceptable, I don't accept that that advice was right. Mistakes do happen. I therefore needed to chart a way forward subsequent to the bill being drawn out of the ballot. And I think I have very fairly found a mechanism for that to move forward.
And that was to wait and see if the bill came up for its first reading on one of the three members' days then remaining in 2015. If it did, it would be ruled out of order, but if it didn't, it would fall into the next calendar year and be eligible for a second run, which, with continued support from Peter Dunn and the Murray Party, would see it pass its first reading.
I think I've given a very fair way forward for this particular case, and I don't intend to review the decision at all.
But Labor's leader and chief whip did not agree, publicly accusing Mr Carter, who's a National List MP, of helping to save his party from the embarrassment of a defeat in the chamber. Their comments providing National's chief whip, Tim McIndoe, with grounds for alleging a breach of privilege, drawing a ruling on Wednesday, November the 11th, from the Deputy Speaker, Chester Burrows.
Because the matters relate to the Speaker, he has asked me to consider and rule on them. It is suggested that the comments complained of could each amount to contempt of the House and that they reflect on the Speaker in his capacity as Speaker. In two news articles, Mr Little is reported to have stated that the Speaker has, quote, a reputation in short order of acting politically in the way he handles question time, close quote, and, quote, National has clearly had a word in the Speaker's ear, leading him to make an unprecedented decision to stop the bill being read this year, close quote, and further, quote, the ruling raises serious questions about political interference. A news article reported Chris Hipkins as saying, quote, the Speaker is interfering on their behalf to ensure the government does not face that embarrassment, close quote, and further, quote, this is massive political interference in the parliamentary process by the Speaker, close quote.
Mr Burrows said the questions of privilege raised were significant.
In my view, allegations that the Speaker acts on the instruction of the government and interferes in parliamentary process for political reasons are serious matters that suggest that the Speaker is not only biased in performing his duties but is open to partisan manipulation.
Mr Burrows ruled that the comments did raise questions of privilege and referred them to the Privileges Committee to determine whether they amounted to contempt. The committee met twice for preliminary discussions behind closed doors, and in a separate development, the number of members' days remaining in the year was cut to two by mutual agreement in the business committee. Then, as the Labour leader's Healthy Homes Guarantee Bill No. 2 rose up the members' order paper, creating the slim chance of a start on its first reading on the last members' day of the year on Wednesday, December the 2nd, the Business Committee removed the possibility of it being ruled out of order by postponing any consideration of the bill until after the first sitting day in 2016, on Tuesday, February the 9th. Then, on the final day of this year in the House, the Leader of the Opposition caught the Speaker's eye just before the start of question time.
Point of order, Andrew Little.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. In recent weeks, statements have been made by members on this side of the House about you, which reflect upon you. And I wish to draw to the attention of this House that correspondence has gone to the Chair of the Privileges Committee today, accepting that those comments were unparliamentary and expressing regret for them.
I thank the member sincerely.
So a happy ending to the year and the prospect of many more close calls in the year ahead in a House almost evenly divided. and outside it, the possibility of an explanation for Mike Sabin's sudden resignation. I'm Tom Frewen.
And I'm Rhys Lyon.
And this program was made with funding from Parliament.